welcome to the Vibrational Voyage radio program. Vibrational Voyage is about exploring the evolution of consciousness and the dynamics of global transformation. My name is Tony McGettigan, and I'll be your host for this journey. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino. This is the Vibrational Voyage program, which happens every Tuesday night from 11 to midnight. And I guess Amit couldn't be here tonight. Lars filled in. Look forward to seeing you, Amit, as soon as you can get back. So tonight, we've got a rather interesting experience for you. Couple of live guests who are making their way here right now. They should be here in just a few minutes. But I wanted to tell you a little bit about what's going on in the sky. The moon, that moon. Moon's almost full. And so it'll be exact, actually tomorrow afternoon. Originally, I thought it was a.m., but it's a p.m., exact full moon time. And the event, when it occurs, I think it's about 1:21 p.m. Pacific tomorrow. When this occurs, very rare, very precise alignments. Of course, the sun will be exactly opposite the moon. That's the definition of the exact full moon. But what also will be occurring, because the sun will be at 29 degrees of Capricorn and this moon at 29 degrees of Cancer. In addition, we'll have Jupiter and Uranus. I think Uranus is actually the one that's a bit more exact. It's escaping me. Here. Oh, no. Jupiter is the one that's a bit more exact. Uranus is catching up, I believe. So when this occurs, Jupiter and Uranus will be roughly at 29 degrees, roughly. I forget which one's out in front. And then also, they'll be in Pisces. So we'll have a trine, Moon, trine, Uranus, and Jupiter. And then we'll have Neptune and Chiron, which are still together. Those two will be making an aspect at 150 degrees, very exact. I think Chiron is exact at 29 degrees and Neptune somewhere like 27 degrees. So it's very, very interesting. We've had very strong aspects with all of these planets interacting over recent years. And what it seems to portend on multiple levels is very interesting. Just look at the individual elements. Jupiter, abundance, aspiration, growth, expansion. Uranus, insight, community, friendship, discovery, innovation, revelation. Neptune, the ocean of consciousness, vision, depth, dreaming, and Chiron, healing, soul aspiration, soul direction, fate, the potential. Our true potential, I think one could say, especially when we find and address our deep, deep, deepest yearning, deepest wound, the thing that has us most troubled and bound up in ways. And then we have the sun and the moon. And the sun's at 29 degrees of Capricorn. So what the sun's position kind of resonates with is that there's a Anything that happens at 29 degrees, there's a finishing process, a transitioning, a transcendent process. The expression of Capricorn, all of our notions of structure, all of our attention to shape and structure the way it has been. And, you know, the benefits that we've gained from that, the blessings of that. But the condition from which we are immediately emerging, and then the moon at 29 degrees Cancer, is about the deep knowing of that environment, of that structure. And so we have this very interesting interplay that's going on with the interaction of these heavenly bodies. And I didn't get you guys set up. I'm going to put some music on for just a minute. My guests are here, but I'll tell you guys a little bit about just a little bit more about this alignment for the full moon tomorrow, and we'll get everybody dialed in here. You're listening to the Vibrational Voyage program on KKUP Cupertino. Let's have a little bit of the stuff that I frequently play when we're getting the show started or finished. Be right back. Stay tuned. Got a couple of guests for you. So we are back. Oh, I just want to say another minute or two, a couple more quick things about the full moon. Full moon tomorrow, about 1:21 p.m. Pacific time, it'll be exact. And the moon will be making this beautiful harmonious angle with Jupiter and Uranus. They recently had their very last exact conjunction, but they're still really close together. And then there's a 150-degree angle, very exact 150-degree angle, with Neptune and Chiron. And so some of what this resonates with for me is certainly new dimensions. The thing that keeps coming back to me, too, is big, profound discoveries. Realization, the recognition and realization of a different quality of our knowing, of our experience. And that's something that that is present, and this full moon resonates with that really strongly. So it's very, very lovely. See what you feel when you're out there, and get out there and check it out tonight. The moon is still kind of sort of right up, well, it's near Gemini, it's above Orion, and there's a really beautiful star formation with Orion and Sirius and Aldebaran. And that's depicted on my website. You can go look at that. There's an animation that had to do with the solstice eclipse. Well, the moon is in that vicinity tonight, so the formation is similar. So if you go look at that depiction at New Consciousness Rising, look for the animation. Just scroll down the front page a little bit, and you'll find it. And then go out and look at the moon. It's in a similar position tonight. All right. Gosh, I gotta welcome my guests here. I've got Vinny and Blake here in the studio. You've heard, listened to me and Vinny talking before, and I got to really thank Vinny for helping to pull this one together tonight. But we also have Blake here, and Blake is working on a project. I've actually had a little bit of collaboration with this as well. It's a film project that's currently going on, and it has to do with some very interesting subjects. And I want to welcome you, Blake, and say thank you so much for being here. And you know, we want to get to the movie and hear about that project and some of the other work that you're doing. But tell us a few things about yourself first, just a little bit of the stuff that you do, because you wear many hats. There's a lot of different things that you do that's part of your professional life.
Right. Well, thank you very much for inviting me onto your show.
You're welcome. So,
my name is Blake Turrentine, and I'm the CEO of ParanormalResearch.com. And the company's been around for a while, and it's in order to be around for a long time, you have to be very inventive in what you do to keep the company going. So, you know, we've crossed a lot of different areas of the paranormal, and in order to do that, we have to get daytime jobs to support it. So, but people are always asking us, like, okay, what are you going to do with the website? What's going on? What are y'all doing right now? And so we scraped up some enough dollars here to come up with a feature film. And that's what I'm really excited about and to talk about. So,
well, I'm very glad that you're here to share that with us tonight. And Vinny was part of this as well. And Vinny and I have kind of worked on a few different programs here for this radio program over the years. And then Vinny told me about this project. So I know you felt immediately drawn to the project, and you felt like it was something that you really enjoy participating in. I know it was kind of an interesting way that you discovered it, too.
Yeah.
Maybe just say a real quick thing about that and how you kind of first got to know Blake and be involved with the project.
I first connected with Blake on Craigslist. He put out an ad for basically magical people in the Bay Area. And I called him on the phone, and we talked a little bit about what the film was about as far as it being involving retro causation, time travel kind of thing. And he let me know that there was going to be a questionnaire, and that I responded to the questionnaire, and I had some back and forth with him on the phone and email, and decided to involve me. And first off, I want to start by thanking you, Blake, because without that first connection, Tony and I wouldn't be involved in the project. And I just really, I want to commend you for putting this together. And from what I've seen so far, I like being involved. And as soon as I got my first contact with any of the people involved, I'm like, these are pretty cool people. I want to hang out with this. So it was things just naturally led into, you know, developing a relationship and the creation of this project and experiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an experimental aspect to it.
Yes.
So maybe that's a good thing to touch on, and maybe you'd like to you know, dive in. Tell us a little bit about the project and about the wherever anywhere you want to begin.
Okay. Well, you know, I guess the first idea is start off in 98 and then 99. It was like, okay, let's do this. And so there's a the original dreams, I guess, were to do sort of like a Twilight Zone sci-fi video streaming on the internet type thing, and to just explore all the different facets of the paranormal. And back at that time, people just weren't ready. Craigslist wasn't around, and the internet was just starting to grow better. And so when I had first advertised all those years ago, I basically heard crickets in terms of response. So it wasn't until, you know, so there's been a lot of startups and stops in the company in terms of trying to go through this with this idea. And actually, it's a whole bunch of projects. And so when I saw this movie come out, Paranormal Activity, that it was just a, you know, whirlwind of success. I was like, well, maybe, you know, people are flocking to the theaters to see Paranormal Activity. Maybe it's the world's ready for paranormal research. So I dusted off the cover of Old Ideas and said, okay, well, the first one I want to make a documentary on is retrocausation, which is a certain form of time travel. And it's where the future communicates back, say, to the present, or the present communicates or affects the past. So instead of cause and effect, it's effect and cause. So with that idea, it was a good topic to pick, because I think there were a lot of ghost stories out there, a lot of people doing ghosts and ghost hunters and investigations and all that. And I've really sort of always frowned against investigations, because it's like they're trying to, you know, investigate something to see if it's true or not. And, well, this company comes from the perspective of, well, we are the paranormal, and, you know, we're trying to educate the normal. So it's quite a battle to get that idea across.
It is an interesting idea, because there's implications too for discovering what could be the dynamics of that kind of communication across experience, you know, from the past to the present, and somehow then also perhaps to the future. There's big implications.
Right. Well, in the course of doing research and filming about it, there wasn't a lot of people that had known about retrocausation, where the future can transmit something back to the past and affect it. I think one of the first ideas that I got about that was a movie like The Seventh Sign or something like that, where this woman was having dreams and they were trying to communicate back to her. And so, you know, I come from the science side of the house. You know, I'm an electrical engineer from San Jose State. And some of these ideas when I was in college just seemed very far-fetched. Some of my teachers in E&M classes, electromagnetics, were like, oh, those are very good ideas, but it's, you know, think Intel, think chips and, you know, computers. And so, I don't know, it's evolved to this today, to where we did some recent research on what is time travel today. And in particular, the future trying to communicate back to us. Mm-hmm. And so, talked with a variety of people, read a few books on that, and then offered up to Craigslist who would be interested in being in this documentary. So, you know, whether it's physicists or psychics or psychologists or people who have magical powers, you know, what have you. Are you able to time travel? What is time travel? What do you think? And this is what this film is about, is what are premonitions? And so that's what we're trying to address in this. And I don't think science takes a bit of a backseat in this documentary. We try to take science as far as we go, but then we just sort of take it as far as it can and then goes from there.
Yeah, there's what I think of with science too is that it has its stories. You know, we have a lot of different ideas and stories about what's going on, but there's more to the story. There are stories that are perhaps not yet imagined or told about how things really work. And so this kind of thought and research to me is fascinating because it kind of probes, goes along those edges and beyond about where we can currently imagine that things are and how things work.
Right. I mean, how old is science in itself? You know, is it 500 years, 1,000 years? Less than 2,000, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And how long have been people seeing ghosts? Mm. You know, more than 2,000 years, I think. Mm. And UFOs. Are there any signs in any caves somewhere of, like, UFOs?
Very clearly.
Ancient stuff I've heard of, too, yeah.
There's been, like, things unearthed in the mountains of, like, South America, like, crafted in gold that showed airplanes, showed rocket ships. Even artifacts from ancient Egypt have shown depicted on the temple walls of Abydos, depicting helicopters. Art from India and the mention of the Vimanas in the Vedas. The Vimanas, they called them flying flaming shields. And so these shields would fly around in this night sky and have battles with each other. And the little sages down below, the human sages below, would depict that in the stories that they told in the epic poetic dialogues of the Mahabharata and the Vedic literature. So, yeah, there's all kinds of ancient streams of that kind of information. It's there on cave paintings and just different tribal stuff, Aboriginal stuff, like the cave paintings of the Aborigines in Australia. There's one spirit being that they express called the Wajina. And when we had the big Olympics in Sydney, you know, the recent modern Olympics in Sydney, and during the opening ceremony, they pulled out a banner, and they showed the face of the Wajina. And the Wajina looks exactly like the little aliens that have been abducting people with the big bug eyes and the big round white ghost faces, you know, ovoid ghost faces. And so when they unfurled that banner, I was like, wow, it's come to fruition. Because here was this indicator that these ancient peoples were already having their own encounter experiences, their own contact experiences, and maybe even abduction experiences. Because if you look at the myths, the fairy folk or whatever come in and take a human child and leave a fairy child as sort of this go-between. And so there's been this intermixing of worlds from ancient times. Mm-hmm. So it's really exciting. Yeah. The long and short of it is there's all kinds of evidence.
Yes. And there's a lot of things that, excuse me, just tend to get ignored or dismissed that are very worthy of attention.
Absolutely.
It's a whole other subject. But to me, I think it's up for us to be thinking about what do we give our attention to.
Right.
And there's a lot of things that are competing for our attention. And there's a lot of things that are pretty destructive. And we tend to make that destructiveness greater.
Right.
With attention, we feed things.
Yeah.
So I think it's very worthwhile and entertaining. It's fun to explore these things. But, you know, in addition, it has implications.
It does. You get called weirdo by your son and your wife and your friends and all that.
Yeah, I've felt that through my, you know, some siblings of mine.
Yeah.
What do you but that's okay. Life? I mean, you know, you grow a thick skin, and if people don't want to believe in ghosts or UFOs, then that's okay for them. You know, there's a sense of redefining your beliefs when you look at stuff like this and your religion and all how that pans out with it.
Yeah.
The approach that I try to take in this is that, you know, the paranormal is not trying to justify itself to science, but science still needs to justify itself to the paranormal. And so just because it can't be explained in math or formulas or repeatable experiments doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it may never be explained by science, and that's okay. It still exists. So the time travel project, a lot of people kept talking about, well, traveling forward in time. And when we did the experiment, it sort of evolved with the, you know, the director. I'm the executive producer on the film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's going to happen, the experiment. There was originally supposed to be two experiments.
Hmm.
And, you know, being not in the film industry and learning and trying to keep it less complicated, I mean, we had a lot of wireless stuff going on that wasn't really explained in the experiment. The whole aspect of it, me being involved in the film, I didn't have intent on being filmed at all in it. And the way I appeared in the film was, it played a role in the experiment, but it was just, docs just take a role, go their own way when you make them documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so you plan and you lay out all the scenes, and then things just happen that the way they do.
Hmm.
I think it was a very successful experiment. There were a lot of predictions that came out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In the group that y'all were in, there were actually three times that we did this experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And the group that was involved in the last time with you, Vinny, and Tony, there was a... we had spent more time with y'all folks, like interviewing you and going over to your house and, you know, talking about things. And that group seemed different from the other groups that we had previously.
In what way?
Y'all were more spiritual, religious-based.
Uh-huh.
Like, it didn't really... It started off with, we gave specific dates and times. So, you know, there was psychics in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, the experiment was to have as many psychics as we could.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Fill the whole building if we could. But obviously, you know, it's wishful thinking. So I knew to say, well, do you see anything happening now? you'd get all sorts of different answers.
Right.
And some of them would be abstract and not as focused. So during the course of it, we came up with specific times and dates in the future. And so, like, we would say, you know, what's going to happen December 12th, 2021 at 4:13 p.m. and 12 seconds. And, you know, we got a variety of different reactions from different people as to what they saw. Some people traveled on their own to those times in the future. Others went backwards. People were just basically all over in terms of time. And one of the things that came out of this documentary is the metaphysical aspects of things where time can be sort of a singularity where everything happens at one time. And so I thought that was the most valuable. Now, there, some of the people that did give predictions, they were giving predictions as follow-up through emails and stuff like that. And one of an astrologer named Edwin, he was sending me emails of things that were to occur. And his words and his phrases, he spoke in phrases in his email, and he separated it by, like, semicolons. And then I remember, like, 2 days after he gave me this prediction, I'd go to Google and I'm searching through news, and the phrase of what he said was exactly the same, reversed without the semicolon. And I was like, wow, that's incredible. You know, I wish we could use that in the film, but people would say, oh, well, you know, it's after the fact and you doctored it. So that's why the importance of this film is that we get predictions out in the future and we see how, you know, how well the experiment turned out.
Well, and the whole adventure itself, to me, is something that has its own peculiar and wonderful resonance to it. There's a story that's happening in the midst of this documentary. And it, as you said, you know, it happens as it happens while you're doing it. And so it's fairly close to being done. That story's kind of almost there, still being edited?
Yes, we're trying to. I was speaking with the editor today, and I'm hoping to look at the first rough cut of the feature film by, say, February 6th.
Okay.
And it's a lot of work to do. I didn't realize how much it would effort it takes to make a movie, a documentary. And we are over budget, but I think it's worth it. I got a lot more projects in mind, and I'm stewing on those and figuring out the best way to reach out to a lot of people out there that can help with that.
No, so that makes sense. And get the first one going, too, and then that might kind of stir some additional interest and synergy, I would imagine.
Right, whether it's, you know, it's in theater, Netflix, or A&E, History Channel, Discovery, what have you, it could turn into a series. Not quite sure at this time. How it's going to pan out. I know there's a lot of marketing to go forward in this.
Yeah, sure, sure. It makes a lot of sense. Well, finding people, you were mentioning earlier that, you know, back in 98, 99, you could hear the crickets. Now it's different somewhat. It's easier to find some of these people. I think, you know, some of the things that are happening in our communities, but certainly, you know, with what the internet provides us as well. It's easier to find these people, and perhaps there's more of them attending and doing things now.
Right. I think it's a little more accepting now. I mean, especially with, like, you know, things that came out like Ghost Hunters and stuff like that. I think, you know, back in 2000 when I did a presentation on what is a ghost, a scientific explanation, you know, I went to physicists and electrical engineers and explained my theories, and they were like, you know, rolled their eyes in the back of their head and sort of walked away, you know, like, ghost. And then now I can come up to them and say, hey, remember, you know, 10 years ago, 11 years ago when I was talking to you about this? And this is, whenever I see ghost hunters, they say, oh, we think of you automatically. You know, it's like, so right now the focus of the company isn't really on ghosts so much, though everybody wants to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to, we'll revisit them as to what they are. I think the work that was done back then, what ghosts are actually more than that, I think, today.
What do you notice in terms of repeating patterns? I'll lay this out for you for a second. There's a a very strange and unusual thing that I feel we're starting to become aware of, and it has to do with time. It's the way different times are connected through cycles and then through harmonics. Mm-hmm. There's things in our calendars now that we can see with what we've learned of the Mayan calendar and like Terence McKenna's time wave, that there's times that are connected. There's harmonics through time. Right. Well, those harmonics also exist in our own direct experience as well as the collective experience. So maybe since those times, matter of fact, there's one cycle in particular which is very interesting. It's a Mars cycle. It's 17 years long. So that would take us back to like 93, 94. It was, you know, the thing that's the same in that cycle is the retrograde patterns of Mars go around the whole zodiac in 17 years. So there is a Martian quality to it. So there's something similar in our actions and in the pattern of our karma, you could say. Karma just means action. There's something resonant with last year it was 93. We're always having a 17-year resonance to what's 17 years behind us, 34 years behind us, 52 years behind us, or 51, 52. So I'm when I hear you describing this too, I'm thinking, you know, there's places where we have a feeling of a connection to something that we've already done. And it seems to me that it's complementary to the things that are being looked at and explored with your film project.
Right. I in the experiment, basically, the documentary is called X-band transmission, and for people who know what X-band is, there's a little play on words with that. One is it's deep space communications that they talk with the Voyagers.
Okay.
So, nice. Yeah. And I didn't really think about that, but maybe I knew about
that's
that years
one.
Ago and I forgot about it. So, X-band is part of the film, also stands for Generation X.
Okay.
Sort of like this genre of people of like, okay, we're going to send a signal into the future,
mm-hmm.
and see if something or someone or whoever can send something back to us. And the theory in that deals with like time harmonics.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone, to say, was to transmit a signal back to us, they're a billion years in the future from now, and they were to send something back, it would have, if you think of waves, in a sense, there's certain peaks to the wave fronts. And so those wave fronts hit on different years. So, and those years could be in alignment through, say, a planetary alignment,
mm-hmm.
Or other contributing factors.
Right.
So say if a signal was to go back, it would say hit 25, 12, 23, 54, you know, 1916 in the year 512.
Right.
So it doesn't hit on every year, no. But it would have these peaks on certain years.
Right.
And so if you're able to tune to that, you could pick up these communications. Mm-hmm. And certain patterns would be recognized through that. So one of the things, like in the experiment one, that sort of ties in with experiment two is sending effect ripples back in time. And so leveraging time harmonics, let's say that there are certain years that if you ring a bell, that bell will also sound in another time. Okay, it's something, a simple thing like that.
Yes.
Well, an effect ripple is like if you send something back, it hits at a certain point to where it forks another path, another multipath. Mm-hmm. So if you believe in multiple universes, mm-hmm. if you believe in Stephen Hawking's M theory, mm-hmm. You know that there could be multiple universes of you, mm-hmm. where you made the right turn versus the left turn. Mm-hmm. And let's say you did make the right turn. And you travel along a path and you come back to this intersection point to where if you made the left turn, you would eventually wind up at that same intersection point. You know, two roads diverged in a wood and then they sort of come back together at the end of the wood.
Okay.
When they come back together, if you were to send a signal back in time and say, well, I did make the right turn, the right turn, but what if I had taken the left turn? That knowledge would come back to you. That ripple would come back. That knowledge of making a left turn would come back to you at that point of that intersection point. So it's sort of like an intuitive leap.
And there's a connection that happens because of what you're describing there. Like there's a recognition. Yeah, when you took the fork, and when you mentioned when the roads come back together, then there's a recognition that there was another choice, mm-hmm. somehow, and that part of the experience somehow is then also connected in some way.
Yeah, and so if you try to go back to the point where the roads first diverged, mm-hmm. and imagined taking down the left path, mm-hmm. and imagining what you saw, and you really focus on that, there is knowledge in, say, another universe where you did make that left turn, mm-hmm. And you did experience other things that happen. That can come back to you when those two points cross again. So, say for the experiment, right? Remember back in the room when we did the countdown, okay?
Yeah.
Can we still communicate back to those people today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we may not be able to, you and me, mm-hmm. all right, not like here now, but maybe somebody a billion years can, mm-hmm. from now. And so when they do, the knowledge that happens back at that point, you can all of a sudden gain knowledge today that you're, mm-hmm. like, whoa, wait a minute, I just had a flash, and I don't know where that came from, but it was from that result of that experiment time.
It's very much like your experience that you just described with the astrologer who sent you the messages divided by the semicolons, and then a couple days later, they show up. Well, there's that resonance. There's a harmonic, mm-hmm. right directly in your experience, the micro expression of that wave. It seems very interesting that confirmation. There's one other thing I got to point out too. I don't want to dive off that subject. It's fascinating. But today I saw this and I thought of you. There's an article that came across. I haven't read it yet. It was on Twitter, just a little posting. But it's the physics, some physics blog. It says, new type of entanglement allows teleportation in time, say physicists. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting today. That you don't see one, you know, a message like that every day.
Right. We did take a look at quantum entanglement.
Hmm.
And, yeah, there is some new things out there regarding that. One of the physics side of it, if you want to take a look at it from a science point of view, is imagine that a wormhole opens up in your head, okay? And as a result, memories are created in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that wormhole could be, you know, spatial or time-based.
Mm-hmm.
So let's imagine it's time-based, that this wormhole opens up and it's what's going to happen a couple of minutes from now.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens to open up. And so you have this memory formed of what you see a couple of minutes from now.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look into the environment, there's these certain patterns, certain fractal patterns that sort of bring to light these memories, these new formed memories.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been studies, too, on psychologists. I believe there's a recent article coming out. It was the study was done last year of where psychologists are starting to really take this seriously as to what is clairvoyance? Why do people have these memories of the future? You know, is it all cooked up in their head?
Right.
Or is there some type of entanglement that it's they're just, you know, they're gifted. They have a certain number of atoms in their head more so than other people do. And are genes that, you know, make these atoms more together in this person. And they're just able to pick up on a better antenna than other folks.
Yes. And we can thank Carl Jung for opening that window from psychology to the paranormal and parapsychology. He was one of the fathers of that. One of the things that came up for me, Tony, when you were saying that was is that, and I had a question for you being an astrologer, because I see that there's a similar resonance between what's going on now in our time that we're in and what exactly happened in at the cusp of the 1800s going into the 1900s. And I see from my own explorations, I see that the end of the 1800s into the 1900s was the beginning of the modern renaissance of magic and mysticism, as well as it was the beginning, the very, very dawning of the quantum age. And now we're in this other place where I also see another resonance with magic and mysticism and this dialogue with quantum physics that suggests that magic is very much real, that the way that they figure this thing that we call reality is actually constructed, if it can be even called something as solid as constructed.
Mm-hmm.
At the very core of it are magical properties. Things can be something and something else at the same time.
Right.
Things can communicate at a distance with other things. And so I see... Are we getting a call?
Just a buzz.
All right. I see a tremendous resonance with what's going on now in the renaissance of magic and mysticism at the end of the 1800s, 1900s. So I was wondering, like, what kind of astronomical, astrological alignments we share with that time.
Hmm.
So that'll be for homework, right?
Well, there is one.
There is one?
Yeah, there's one that you can talk about, I can point to right off. And it's a discovery cycle.
Uh-huh.
It's the Uranus orbit.
Yes.
And then its relationship with other planets. It takes 84 years for Uranus to go around once.
Mm.
And so Uranus is just about to enter Aries, where Uranus renews itself, new discovery. And it's also about realization. It's about a new experience of our beingness, our basic identity.
Yes.
And so three cycles ago, 3 times 84 would be what? 232 years. So that's, you know, fairly near, about, what, 20 years before the end of the 1700s, when we would have had that, when Uranus was last in Aries. Now, what's very interesting about this is this spring equinox, we're going to have the Sun and Uranus exactly together at the spring equinox point, and that's rare. That doesn't happen every time. It's probably at least several centuries in between when the Sun and Uranus are right there together. They'll be together sometime, but at the very, very point, like within a half a degree, this is occurring. So that's a rare event, and to me, that's all about starting a new cycle. I've had one astrologer said to me that that's a sign of the beginning of the Aquarian Age.
Yeah.
Now that's a term we haven't thrown around much in the last 5-10 years, but it's something that has a resonance certainly to what we're talking about here.
Yes.
A shift in experience.
Yes.
And that's what the harmonics element of these different views of time seem to resonate with. There's similar patterns, but there's also new phases that we enter into.
Well, I mean, do you think that time is a singularity, or is it something that
I love that description.
Is a perspective of
to me, what you described there was brilliant, and it's probably got a lot of you know, beautiful thinking from different perspectives that built into that. Absolutely, and you brought up fractals. To me, it seems obvious. We're seeing time is the place that I think that we actually discover the fractals in a big way because of the patterns that exist in the calendars. We see that the patterns on Earth are resonant with the patterns with the other orbital dynamics. And so suddenly we see a sameness in our near universe. To me, that's the beginning of a launch into a great different view, different experience. So it seems to me that it is like a singularity.
Right. I think I remember reading something recently of saying scientists have now are able to say, well, yeah, planets do affect humans and do affect animals.
I like, saw that one too. Yeah.
And it was like a revelation, isn't it? Oh, yeah. Thank you, science, for discovering that.
A little slow. Way behind magic.
I can believe.
Well, and the thing that's so exciting to me is it's a resonance again. So people get hung up on the idea of the causation and so forth, and I'm not attached to that at all. Because when you look at these patterns in their harmonics, you say things go together. There are certain things that go together. And I think in our own experience, we begin to say, from our own direct knowing, there are certain things that go together, depending, you know, despite what we're taught about what goes together.
Yes, yes.
We have our own feelings, our own insight.
Yeah, yeah. The time we're living in is incredible because up until the construction of the World Wide Web, all this information can be shared. And so the commonalities that people share, especially in around these kind of interests and all of that, couldn't really be known. And people were together in little clatches, you know, and having little communities that were formed around that commonality and that, you know, shared interest. But now that the web is out there, and I'm by no stretch of the imagination any kind of technological guy whatsoever, but just having that to capture all of the dialogues of human consciousness that are going on right now at this time.
Yeah.
That's a trip.
It is interesting.
It is a trip.
That we're connected together through that.
You know, in talking with a variety of people, including another astrologer, they were like, this question came up that says, well, if people can travel through time or what have you, how come, you know, they're not here right now, you know, sitting and showing us stuff and, you know, I got a new Star Trek phaser, you know, in my hand.
Yes.
Right. Why are they not here and how come we haven't been able to travel? And she was like, well, they're preventing us from time travel. The people that can or whoever can time travel are preventing us from learning how to time travel.
Hmm.
And I thought that was interesting. So somebody was holding us back. We're not ready for it.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another aspect of it in the UFO conference that the film crew went on. There was a book that one of the people that gave me, I was reading it, and they were talking about, well, how do all these UFOs travel around? I mean, they come from all these distant galaxies, and they're here with a snap of a finger.
Yes.
I mean, is that a little bit faster than time, or can you sort of elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, they say they bend wormholes or whatever, that they actually alter the web of time and space to move from point A to point B. And when they get here, then they use the electromagnetic fields of the planets that they're on. But to get from that vast distance to this vast distance, they got to join the two points together in some way.
So do you think the aliens are messing with us, changing time, or do they not care? Or
well, some people say that when they have direct encounters with them, that there's all kinds of time fluxes going on. And you'll be driving your car 1 minute. I remember one story Whitley Strieber put out there. He was driving his car, and we got it close.
All yeah, right. sorry to catch you off.
But had high weirdness. It was like the Twilight Zone. And he wound up in a driving, going in off of one exit and coming back onto a completely different exit in a completely different state.
Very interesting. I only wish we had more time to go into it. We got to wrap it. But, Blake, tell us really quickly about the name of the project, the website, anything you'd like to share, just as far as people who'd like to follow up and maybe see more.
Okay, great. So X-Band Transmission, that's X-BAND, Transmission. You search that on YouTube. You'll get to see the first trailer cut. It's very rough. And the doc will probably be vastly different from that. And we also got like a Facebook standing, I believe, as well on that.
So. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming down here tonight. I know it's late. I very much appreciate you coming and sharing some of your thoughts and participating in the discussion. It's very, very enjoyable. And Vinny, thank you as much.
You tell me.
It's a real pleasure.
Definitely. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, most welcome. I'd love to do it again, sincerely, anytime we can work it out. And I want to thank all of you out there for listening. Thank you so much. Keep KKUP in your thoughts and let people know that you know what's on here, okay? And take good care. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino 91.5 FM. We'll be right back.